Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. Today we sit down with Benjamin Brown, the beverage director at Porchlight. We talk about the parallels between his love of music and bartending, his entry into the New York bar scene, and how he worked his way up to be the beverage director at Porchlight. And then it's a dip into the archives, and we were joined by the incredible team behind the legendary Northside Festival. They brought with them the singer and performing artist Gabby, who gave a great chat and a fantastic live in-studio performance. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network. Benjamin, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
So you grew up in Elmira, New York, which is 4 hours outside the city, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it's about a 4.5 hour drive northwest, pronounced Elmira.
Elmira. You know, I've always been fascinated because I grew up in Philadelphia, which is about like 2.5 hours outside the city. And I feel like when you're growing up close to like the beating heartbeat that is New York, it just starts like getting in your brain and your blood and your soul at some point. Like, how old were you when you started looking towards the city and started being like, there's food there, there's music there, there's drinks there?
I think, so the first time I would have visited would have been 1997 or 98. Mm. I had an uncle that was living in the Upper East Side and still lives in the Upper East Side there. So I think just being in that environment was certainly a culture shock, different from Elmira, just like the food. And mm-hmm. I think ultimately we ate out of TGA Fridays in Times Square, but even that was just like the coolest thing ever, going to a Broadway show and what have you. But I think by the time I hit high school and was listening to more like folk music and rock music and the 60s lore kind of just
yeah.
in my head, and I was like, okay, I got to find a way to get here. So it was actually through music ultimately that I, after college, and I studied guitar in college. A lot of friends had already moved down here, so I was like, oh, this would be great place to kind of form a band, and I can market myself as being this experienced guitar player, even though like I at that point was kind of hadn't played much electric in a while. But so you know, the pull had been there for some time.
So because you work in the bartending drinks world, you know, a lot of times we talk to people who work in the food world, like, oh, I would got into food when I was a teenager and things like that. And obviously maybe there was some imbibing when you were a teenager, but it seems like music was the momentum in your younger life. What was it about it? What is it about music that pulled you like out of your town into the city that's been driving you creatively?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is a small town.
Mm.
You needed to kind of find an outlet. You know, to not drive yourself crazy, I think.
Just to find other people who liked some of the stuff you liked, right?
Yeah. So I think finding those people that, you know, had that, making that connection with them, was just, looking back on it, was so cool. And it's something obviously that kind of happens in your formative years, when you just see something, you take it and you run with it. But I think that especially like imagination aspect, the creative element to it, kind of takes you to another place in your head.
It's just so interesting to have a creative outlet that isn't 100% tied to food or drink as like your first creative outlet. Cause a lot of times when we chat with people, it's like, I always knew I was going to do food. My grandma cooked, my mom cooked, my dad cooked. I got into restaurants at 14 or 15. But yeah, you come to the city to play music and to get well known. Was getting into bartending sort of just like the secondary thing? Was just like, this is just the way to pay the bills, but the music is going to be the ultimate goal?
I think so. Yes. Secondary for sure. But I think the idea in my head of what it would be like to work in the service industry in New York at that time was also something that was, you know, I didn't see it as necessarily just a job.
Mm.
Something that was actually like, I could see myself doing this for some time, and the fact that it'll pay my bills if I'm out like gigging and stuff, and was a plus in that way. I think there were some similarities about the creative aspect and where I was going when I was making music, and where my head's at when I'm thinking about drinks, or the very similar kind of headspace.
When you got to the city, what year was it? What was the music scene like? What was the bar scene like? Cause it's changed so much over like the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah. So I came in September of 2012, to when I first moved down here intending to live. And within the first couple of weeks, I was staying with friends on their futon on in Brooklyn and Williamsburg. And a friend of mine had been working at Maison Premiere as a host.
Shout out. Love him.
Yeah. And I think within that first couple of weeks, before I even had a job, they were like, hey, let's go check it out. And I was like, yeah, cool. This bar that I can't afford anything on the menu and dimly.
Dollar Oyster Happy Hour was friends to so many of us back then.
Yeah. But I think also like that I hadn't even consumed my first oyster at that point. So I think we went in and that was my first time eating raw oyster. And my friend was like, hey, there's this off menu, cool drink. I think at that time it was off the menu, maybe not, but it was my first Sazerac.
And
that I remember it distinctly, just like the cold chilled glass. And the, I think I had like in my head too, growing up in Elmira, one of my friends had a bottle of absinthe his dad might have made. And we were so convinced that we were going to like trip out on it or whatever. So just seeing all those bottles that they had there, and I was like, where is that from? And it just was so transportive, and I guess still is. But it was like just a whirlwind moment where I was just kind of like, wow, this is like, I don't know anything. I don't really know what's going on. And I'm like, this is really cool, but like, how do I get in?
Now, do you have a personality of discovering something and then diving deep all in, like getting all the books, doing all the research and things like that? Or was it like, I need to get behind a bar and learn just from doing it?
I think it was both. So at that point, I had a friend of mine that I went to school with. He was working at the Modern. And I was like, cool, I can do that. And I think I walked in. I was like, I don't know. I'd worked in restaurants and things before upstate, but it was completely different. Everyone was wearing suits and like hair all well maintained. And it was just all so new to me, I guess. But anyhow, I convinced someone that I could be behind the bar as a bar back. And I did that for a couple of years, actually. But the bartenders were so generous with their knowledge and pointing me in the direction of the books at that time that were available to go to for reference. And that's when I kind of just became obsessed with it.
It's so interesting to get in through... I mean, look, it's all physical labor, but bar backing is such like it is a tough job. It is so tough. You are on your feet. You are lugging stuff. You're hauling stuff. You're cleaning and things like that. And to have that be the start of your journey into crafting high end cocktails, at what point did it start to shift for you? Being like, oh, like the physical labor. While I'm still doing it, I'm starting to get more into this like creative aspect. Like you sort of talked about, you've seen the parallels between like what you were making with music, but applying it to drinks.
Yeah. I mean, I look back on it and I know that I needed some time to actually hone the skills and everything, be guest facing as opposed to just running around being physical and saying, hey, like I've paid my dues, like give me my shifts. I guess, I mean, just to answer your question, I always wanted it, but it took maybe a little bit more time for me to stand out against the people that were bartending at that time.
I mean, was it that competitive that everyone was just trying to go for the few shifts that were available?
So I think, yes, especially then. So I think then versus now, like there are so many places to work. I think there were certainly fewer than I want to say.
Yeah, because during that time, it was like if you wanted a real cocktail, especially in New York City, half a dozen bars, most of them were speakeasies. And now, especially today, if a high-end restaurant or even a medium-end restaurant that serves cocktails doesn't open up with a cocktail program, it's a little odd. Like, you're never going to go in and find a spot that doesn't have house cocktails, something that's been specifically tailored for the menu. Back then, it was a little bit different.
For sure. I think, like, there was the Renaissance had already taken off, and most of those craft places were already doing fresh juices and bringing back old recipes and whatnot. And that's, I think, what informed the program there then, too. I think also when I ultimately decided to leave because Porchlight was opening up and I wanted to be in a program that was a little bit more focused on that, as great it was to be around some of the most world-class food and wine in the world, I definitely wanted to be more in it. And that's kind of when I met Nick.
Shout out. Love Nick.
And with that kind of opening team was like just an insane amount of talent. So I like certainly then too, like I was like, I have been doing this for a few years, but compared to you, I still have no idea what's going on. So it was like, yeah.
I mean, go to learn from the best. All right, let's take a quick musical break and then we come back. I want to talk about, you going to Porchlight. And then eventually your rise to beverage director at Porchlight. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Together,
now, people, and together we stand.
Boy, girl, woman, and man.
I'll tell you something else. Before things go wrong, as it sometimes will, when the road you travel seems all uphill,
let's work together. Come on, come on, let's work together.
Now, people, and together we stand. Every boy and girl, woman, and man. Give that boy another half pint. Make someone happy, make someone smile. Let's all work together, make our laughs worthwhile.
Let's work together. Come on, come on, let's work together.
Now, people. Boy, girl, man, figure. Woo, go on. Give him another drink, baby. Right on. First. Now, 2 or 3 minutes, 2 or 3 hours. What does that mean in this long life of ours? That's right, Brian.
Come on, let's work together.
Now, people. Mike Edison.
We are Daddy Long Legs.
Daddy Long Legs.
Mike Edison.
Dig it with a shovel, baby. Woo.
That was too much to handle.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes here with Benjamin Brown, the beverage director of Porchlight. So before the break, you're telling us you've left the Modern, you wanted to get over to Porchlight. You know, every bar has its own personality, especially nowadays with it. Not, you don't even have to really teach people about cocktail culture. It really is established. What did you love about those early days of Porchlight? What did you start to pick up that you knew that you couldn't get anywhere else in the industry at that time?
I think what Porchlight was and is very much still these days, we're decidedly a high volume cocktail bar. So to be able to have as many drinks at that quality at the same time while serving 200 people at any given time, it takes a lot of focus. Intention has to be there from the beginning. I think also leaning into the very much so the hospitality aspect of it, knowing the recipes, like they're already there on the back of your head, and you're not considering, it's like, oh, how do I make a Naked and Famous? How do I make a Louisiana? It's like, it's just it's like someone says it and it clicks. Where your focus and intention is kind of going is the hospitality part of it. And it's being with the guests and making those experiences, you know, not tailored to whatever the situation is.
A lot of the times when we have a chef on here, like their goal has always been like, I'm going to be a chef, I'm going to own a restaurant, or, you know, I'm going to go work somewhere like that. We haven't had a chance to chat with a lot of beverage directors. What does that journey look like? You know, how do you go from being a bartender, getting in with a company, to eventually like rising to like being the director of a program, especially at such a incredible spot like Porchlight?
Yeah. So I think my journey coming from the Modern in 2015, I was started, I continued as a barback and server. That was actually my first time that I was serving guests and guiding menus and everything too. And it was a great experience, especially still getting my knowledge up from the bartenders that were working there. Over time, I got that the coveted open on a Monday opening bartender shift for lunch, and kind of worked on my prioritizing and
big volume at that time, right? Huge, right?
I think the Monday lunch. I mean, it's all relative, right? Like if you get three or four guests that walk in at the same time, and you've never really done it before, you're like kind of like, oh shit, what do I do? kind of thing. So it's as much as like you think you know, it's actually getting that experience for me. That so anyway, working those shifts and then finally moving towards the busier nights, and then of course pandemic hits, we close for a year, come back with a small skeleton crew, myself and then the head bartender at the time, a few servers as well. And then ultimately I get, Nick still beverage director at this time. And then I become head bartender in 22. So I take on more of the ordering, etc. And then ultimately one thing led to another and Nick decided that he was going to be a full-time dad. So there's this job that's available. Much of which I had been doing while he was on his paternity leave while still bartending. And I decided to, hey, I would love to take on this new role as beverage director.
When you take over at a place that's been established, and obviously there was a pandemic reset, how much of it is steering the ship, keeping it going forward? How much of it is putting your own mark? How do you find that balance?
Porchlight's been around for at this point 8 years. So our menu is kind of divided into like the seasonal offerings and then established classics, both one like modern classics, classic classics, and then ones that we've had over the years. So there's still a couple of opening menu things that are on there. So I guess a lot of it is still maintaining those, what we've done, kind of past, present, and then looking to the future always. But I think where I make my name and make changes is incrementally. At this point, it's been 8 months, so I haven't tweaked anything too crazy. People will note that there's probably more aquavit on the menu than there has been in the past. But nothing to really make people's
head spin.
Certain thing, like Gunmetal Blue, not going anywhere.
No.
One of the reasons, like, why I've been around for so long is I like the way that we have our menu. Leaning into the classics, I love that. I love guiding somebody to, like, an Army and Navy or something. And then we have Orgeat, so then I can do some crazy things over here for our seasonal menu. But just having that balance between the two is something that I really like.
I mean, speaking of seasonal menus, I know that you're going to be doing a holiday pop-up bar Camp Porch Light post-Thanksgiving. Tell me a little bit about that. Is that a chance when you do those sort of pop-up short runs things, you can experiment a little bit more?
Yeah, so Camp Porch Light is started as a New Year's Eve party. In 2016. So we'll deck the place out with a bunch of trees and have campy themed drinks and food offerings, very nostalgic things like that, some holiday eggnog and hot butter rum sprinkled in. But for post Thanksgiving to Christmas, we're gonna do it for a month and see how it goes. I think it's gonna be really cool. The thing that happens, it always is like we put all this work into doing it for a day. It's like we could just be a thing for people to kind of experience just for the holiday, for holiday parties that we get so many of. And
yeah,
it's a really neat thing for people to have.
Yeah, it's the same amount of work to set it up for a day or for a couple of weeks or a month or things like that.
So I think it's definitely something I'm looking forward to having around for a bit longer, because we always have so much fun doing that. Just the staff will go around with like these little shot ski things and just neat little things that kind of happen throughout the guest experience. So it's a bit of holiday in camp, yeah.
Yeah, it's the best time in New York City. So listen, with the responsibilities, with everything running, with the holidays coming up, how's the guitar playing? Are you still able to get sit down?
It's right here. I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
So I think, like, for me, like, having that sort of balance, if you want to do all these, like, all the stuff, you want to do these pop-ups, and we do a book club too, so, and it takes a lot of energy, and to kind of create that, you kind of have to be able to step away for a little bit. So while it has been difficult the past several months to find the time to play, I've made it priority to sit down with it, which is what I'm going to do right after we talk today.
Amazing. Well, listen, I won't keep you that much longer from your guitar. If people want to visit Porch Light or come to the pop-up, where can they go? How can they check out what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so it'll be 11/25, 11/24, I think, is that November, the Friday, Black Friday. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be run through New Year's Eve. So Porch Light is at 271 11th Avenue. Just come on in. We do parties pretty frequently, but we are no one to turn away a group of 20 to 30 that are just looking to hang out.
I love it. I love it. Well, Benjamin, thank you so much. Also, a big thank you to Bailey for setting this up. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Stacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
I will throw some sea salt over my own head. Sprinkle flour to keep Satan off my doorstep. And these are the habits that I can't understand. My rational reflexes stupefy my superstitious contraband. Chinese charms with concave mirrors peel off my sill. Special stones and crystal bones protect me until my mind overcomes the myth of my whispering behemoth. I'll never walk on the ladder. Be careful, your mirrors don't shatter. I'll never walk on the ladder. Be careful. Add to my copper corner lucky pennies, turquoise, and fool's gold. I light up my ghost town sage, water glasses, oils, a witch's orb. I'll never itch my palm. Here's to my lucky dog.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Jeff and Gabby, welcome.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome us.
Yeah. Jeff is from the incredible Northside Festival, and Gabby, who you heard open the show, will be performing there. Let's start with Northside. Ninth year. Million bands. 100,000 people. Where did Northside get its start, and how has it grown over the last 9 years?
Well, it started in 2009 as sort of an outgrowth of the Elle magazine, which you may remember for a long time.
I love the brothers.
Brooklyn Williamsburg heads remember the Elle magazine. Mm-hmm. But it started just as... there were so many venues just around a locus in Williamsburg and Greenpoint that taking advantage of them all to like take them over, throw like the opportunity to have a huge like festival within this small footprint was the idea. And since then, the venue landscape has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. So we are still here, but where here is in terms of like the clubs that we're in, and the places where Northside throws shows has changed a lot. You know, now we started just doing club shows. Now we have, for the last few years, our marquee events have been in McCarran Park, which is, you know, last year we had Brian Wilson's play Pet Sounds,
which was incredible, which was just phenomenal.
Right.
To see it.
Before that, you know, Solange played there a few years back. We've had like Churches Guided by Voices.
Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper played Europa, which doesn't exist anymore.
Good Room Now, but that's
Good Room Now.
That's actually really funny.
It was, I mean, it's crazy to think about because he seems like impossibly young right now, but like he played the Northside Festival in 2013.
So when he was like 20.
He was 20, yeah.
He was 20.
And it was in Europa, which used to be primarily like a Polish disco and like music venue, which is now turned into the Good Room where we'll have shows this year. But I mean, we've been here for vast changes in Brooklyn, and I like to think that we're keeping up with them.
And you've also grown programming outside of just music. I know primarily it started there, but now you have innovation. Well, let's start there.
Right.
The innovation programming, which is some of the best minds in the world coming and speaking on a number of panels.
Absolutely. I mean, this year we're launching something new. We're launching what's called Northside Report, which is like a journalism symposium that has, you know, we're bringing in people like Ben Smith from BuzzFeed. We're partnering with BuzzFeed and The Intercept. So we have speakers like Ben Smith from BuzzFeed, Glenn Greenwald, Mayor Bill de Blasio will be around. Yeah, so we're, you know, obviously this is a really crazy time for media too and journalism. So there'll be a lot of panels and talks about, you know, how to even report about modern times.
Are these going to be, you know, 400 level type panels? It's not like it's not like journalism 101. It's going to get right to the heart of the matter.
It's really honing into like Trump and journalism in the Trump age, and just the name of the, you know, the main panel there is "You Are Fake News." It's sort of digging into how to get out, you know, and how to report, like how to talk about things, like how to get, you know, what is fake news, what isn't. That programming will start on June the 7th, and then music comes in June the 8th and overlaps with those 4 days. I mean, it's just, we're chocked full of like an insane amount of events in that little window of time.
And why do you feel a music festival is a good fertile ground for something like The Intercept and doing this type of programming? And how does that fit into the overall mission of Northside?
Well, I think that, I mean, you can't, it just, people who are active in the arts community in Brooklyn, like, have a lot of interests. I mean, people who, in the arts and in the cultures, who would be out here seeing shows every night and making art every night, are really concerned about these issues. So, I mean, it's a good time to both celebrate, like, the local community and also really, like, bring in people who people might not see on a day-to-day basis.
Well, it's not just about talking. It's also about music, which is why Gabby is here today. Before we get into your projects, can we hear a song first just to kind of set the tone?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us first?
All right, so the first song I'm going to play is called Where. It's a short song off my last album, Sympathy, which came out on Software Records. I build it live off of loops, which is kind of the theme for today, actually.
Okay, that sounds good. Here we go, live on Snacky Tunes.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. You have such a strong background in the performing arts. Your work has been part of the Bob Wilson Watermill Center. Roulette has commissioned some of your work, Andy Warhol Museum. I know that the larger name is Gabrielle. So how does Gabi fit into the Gabrielle world? And how do you make the two distinctions?
That's a good question. Something I think about all the time. I guess I feel like I lead two different lives musically a little bit, but they both inform each other and they entwine all the time. So I guess I go by my full name, Gabrielle Herbst, which is German for autumn, for like more compositional based stuff, like more composer work. So I actually have two shows next week of these two commissions that I just wrote. One is for the Nouveau Classical Project, which is this amazing group of five women for clarinet, flute, piano, violin, and cello. And I made like an electronic vocal score to go with the piece. So I guess, you know, and then I wrote a piece for two classical guitars that's going to be performed next week. So I enjoy composing in a more like notated, I guess, more classical space.
And which name are those projects under?
My full name.
Okay.
And then Gabi is kind of like this other world that I live in sometimes, or all the time. You know, I want to live there all the time. I try. And that is like where I'm singing and writing songs and like in like exploring kind of a different avenue musically and playing in different kinds of venues and, you know, like clubs and just trying to, you know, like feed some of my pop sensibilities with my classical background, I guess.
Is there a song, or is there a time when you start writing a song and you don't know which direction it will take? And if so, how quickly in the process did you figure out which avenue it will live in?
You know, they're the same thing, like, which I'm kind of discovering more and more. And I think that, you know, as I get older, they'll probably literally just become the same exact thing. Like,
which identity?
Maybe I'm finding myself in an interesting way or something.
Which identity wins?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the inner duel of, like, selves.
And does the other one push one project, like one allows you to experiment and say this, like you said, your pop sensibilities? Or does it that since you have such a strong background from your education and your youth, that world kind of is the one that inspires the smaller pop projects?
I just think that, you know, every project is like its own little being. Like, I don't know. I feel like my songs are my babies, and like same with my compositions. You know, it's like I create them and then they like lead their own lives. They kind of dictate what they are. So it's really hard to say. It just depends on the project. But I mean, I love, you know, my Gabi self, I'm really excited to explore stuff with this new record that I'm writing and like go deeper into songcraft, I guess.
And how is it evolving from the first record?
It feels really different to me. You know, it's hard to say what other listeners will think, but I don't know. I guess I've been thinking a lot about, you know, like why I'm writing music and, you know, songs in their purest form and what's most important for me to get across to people. Trying to, you know, not get like too sidetracked by things that aren't interesting to me. You know, like I think virtuosity is something that's not important to me. You know, like simplicity can be just as impacting and beautiful. So I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to go with what I think is really important right now sonically. And I think this stuff sounds, it feels really like personal, which is interesting because I've never really written stuff like that before. So that is cool for me too. It's really scary, which I love. You know, I like doing things that freak myself out. So it's good.
Can we hear another song?
Sure. Okay.
What are you going to play for us?
Let's get scared. Okay. I'm going to play. So I'm playing three songs today, and they're all, like, just so you know when you're listening, I'm like building each song, you know, live by like layers of voice, which is really fun and spontaneous, but also like mildly frightening because like anything can happen. You know, like it's much, it's easier to just be like, play, and then it's like la-di-da, the perfect song. So we'll see what happens.
We're like a bit messy on Snacky Tunes, so it fits right in.
I need a napkin. Okay, cool. So this is, this has like a couple names right now, so maybe I'll just like leave it unnamed.
Perfect. So, Gabby, you are one of the 300 bands that is going to be playing Northside Festival in a couple weeks. Jeff, what can you tell us about the show?
Gabby, we'll be playing with... there's a church right off of McGorlick Park in Greenpoint that's been throwing amazing art shows.
Is that the same one that used to do the sober dance parties?
I don't know. This the programming probably. There
probably
yeah you would I mean you can buy drinks at the show I bet, okay. But
I think that was more the programming less the right. The church,
but it's on Friday June 9th and Gabby will be playing along with Kristen Control, and it's an amazing setup with like people sit in the pews, there are huge like AV installations. It's a beautiful place for a show.
I love that space so much. I've never played there, so I'm really super excited. I also love Kristen Control. She's amazing.
Yes, I mean, she really, it's a great twofer. Have you gotten a chance to get into the church and map things out or plan things that is just recreated in your mind from previous shows you've been at?
I mean, yeah, I've been in there a fair amount. Just exploring. So I don't know. I definitely want to take full advantage of the space. I've already been thinking about that a lot. Like, how can I move around a lot? I actually have a really cool band joining me. I have a harpist, Mary Lou Donovan, and a bass clarinet player, Mara Mayer, and they're like the shit. So I definitely want to, I don't know, I want to like make the show as exciting as possible and as like interactive.
Will they let you get on the organ?
I don't know.
We can ask.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Just like one song. And so who are some of the other bands that are playing this year?
Well, the McCarran Park shows that I mentioned previously, the opening night, we're going to have Dirty Projectors along with Kamasi Washington, the great jazz artist.
What a lineup.
And J-Som, who's a great up-and-coming band also. That's on Thursday the 8th. We have Miguel, the great R&B singer, will be there on Saturday. And we're closing up on Sunday with a huge like punk and emo show with Thursday, Pup coming in from Toronto, Jeff Rosenstock, Tony Molina, and The Hotel Year.
Pup is one of the all-time favorite Snacky Tunes bands. We love them so much.
That show's free, by the way. It's just folks get in with their badge or they can RSVP, but it'll be a whole, there'll be a lot of feelings and a lot of fists pumped.
A lot of like 30-something-year-old like dudes singing along.
I'm hoping for teens. I think we'll get some teens also.
Yeah, and just some quiet people in the back just kind of...
So those are the big shows, but there's shows, I mean, I encourage people to go to Northside Festival's website and peruse the schedule, because there are, you know, we do shows with local labels, we do shows with media companies, we do shows with people like Pitchfork, we do a show with the 33 and a Third book series that we started last year, where artists will take on whole records that they've put out books on. So this year we have Lower Dens playing Ava Gold, Ava's Greatest Hits.
Wow.
At Rough Trade on Saturday the 10th. There's a lot of shows.
I think what's really set Northside apart from some of the other music festivals that span days is that you really are as much about discovery as you are about the headliners. I think some of the other festivals... Oh, in years past, just rely on like the biggest names possible, which you have. But
right.
Kamase and Dirty Projectors are big, but they're not the biggest like stars in the musical universe, because I think you balance it out with really interesting programming.
I mean, that's the goal always. And I mean, it in terms of we really try to work with the community and the people who are here doing shows every day and doing cool things in the city and trying to work with them to do... You know, maybe a slightly more grandiose version, but like to bring in interesting artists that already like fit into the aesthetics of the communities that are here, or just to provide a great celebration for everybody.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on the show. Gabby, we want to get one more song in.
Yay.
I'd like to thank the team at Full Service Radio and Rice for giving us that very special interview. We'll be back next week with another full live episode of Snacky Tunes. Gabby, what are you going to take us out with?
It's called Till the End.
Till the End. Aptly named. Jeff, congrats on this year's festival. Looking
Thanks
forward
for
to
having
come
us.
Checking out the shows. Fist yeah. pumping and all. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.